creator burnout is something that I feel we've been talking about a lot lately, and I feel that it's also something we're going to talk about a lot more in the months and years to come. What I want to really get into for today's episode is how you can avoid burnout for as long as possible, how can you recover from burnout if you're feeling overwhelmed, and also a conversation around protecting your creativity when you decide to start benefiting from it and monetizing it. So look forward to that in today's episode.
Are you an entrepreneur, creative pro, or in a transition to becoming one? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Create Something Awesome Today podcast, where it's all about educating and motivating you with simple and easy to implement ideas. And of course, helping you create something awesome today. And now your host. He's a YouTuber, public speaker, whose deepest regret was not buying Bitcoin sooner, Roberto Blake.
Hey everybody, this is Roberto Blake helping you create something awesome today. Welcome back to the show. Earlier, I brought up that this is going to be an episode focused on creator burnout, whether you're doing content creation full-time as a YouTuber, a podcaster, a Twitch streamer, whether you're doing stuff on Instagram, or whether you're working in the industry for a company or a brand or as a freelancer. There's a lot of ways to be a creator, and I think that burnout is something we all experience at some point in our career, whether we're a creator, an employee, or an entrepreneur. At least I know that was my experience. Something that I haven't brought up a lot in terms of some of my corporate background is, if you guys are not familiar, I actually got my start in graphic and web design. I also later worked at an ad agency, and then I was a marketing manager within a company doing traditional marketing as well as early social media. Now, this was prior to me building my own business as an entrepreneur. And what I can tell you is that I experienced burnout multiple times within my corporate career and my traditional background. It was something that plagued me quite often, because you have to understand where burnout comes from. It partly comes from being overwhelmed, but also from expectations not matching reality. My dream was to be a creator for a living, not necessarily as an online content creator, because that wasn't really a thing just yet, and also not as an entrepreneur. Back in my day, I thought that was something you earned a right to do in your 40s and 50s. It wouldn't occur to me that you could do it in your 20s or 30s. So here we are. Now, when it comes to why I was burnt out, there were a lot of reasons. I was overwhelmed in my own personal life with my financial struggles and difficulties there, situations within my family with health issues, and then just my own personal battles with mental health, in terms of the fact that I lived through many years of depression. Functioning depression is still depression. There's a great YouTube channel that Katie Morden does that's around these topics within mental health. I believe she's the largest mental health channel on YouTube. Make sure you check her out. I'm also going to link to her in the show notes, but she's actually talked a lot about things like, you know, high functioning depression, burnout. She did an actual series around burnout, and she's had several conversations with content creators and interviews throughout her YouTube channel. And this is a topic that I've been thinking about a lot, because I'm in a much healthier place now. But depression and anxiety is something that you ultimately manage. It may not be something that you can think of as being completely over. It's something that you'll revisit throughout different periods of your life for different reasons and in different ways. For me, I understand that a lot of my triggers are related to a lack of control, or my perception of a lack of control. When I was an employee, what didn't I have control over? I didn't have control over my time, the way that I spent my time. Ultimately, my employers could decide when I had to wake up and when I had to go to bed to be able to be at the job. But also, a lot of times my employers would interrupt me on my free time, whether I was already at home, clocked out of the office, or whether I was on my paid leave and vacation. I was constantly waiting for that other shoe to drop, of them taking, clawing back my time and me having no control, no freedom, no agency, no way to tell them no, no way to reject them, because they also controlled my income, my livelihood, my ability to pay my bills and take care of myself and other people. So that was something that was a major stress factor for me with regard to constant anxiety. And also, again, feeling overwhelmed and depressed and not feeling like I'd fully arrived yet, despite I'm supposed to have my dream. I'm supposed to be doing exactly, I'm doing what I love every day for a living, but the circumstances under which I was doing it, the outcomes that produced didn't match my original expectations. And it didn't match what was something that was making me comfortable and making me happy and making me feel satisfied. I also had no control over my ideas, no sense of ownership over that. I was doing work in a very, I would say, much more mechanical fashion than a creative fashion. I was using my creative skills, but I wasn't expressing my creativity and my own vision and thoughts for things. I was doing what I was told. I was reduced to being somebody's pair of hands. And that's not really that satisfying. So, I mean, it's a good living. Don't get me wrong. I don't take that for granted. I learned a lot, and it did provide me a livelihood, and I got to do things that a lot of people never get to do. And sometimes I did get to express my creativity, and sometimes that was valued. Sometimes I got a, you know, attaboy. Sometimes, you know, I got a little pat on the back. Rarely got a bonus or the appropriate compensation, but, you know, those stories are for another time. The point is, I found myself feeling the constant pull of the fact of feeling ungrateful for all the opportunity I had that other people didn't have, the overwhelming guilt of that, simultaneously coupled with the frustration, sometimes the anger that I felt, you know, in this situation. So, you know, there were a number of, you know, factors here that were contributing to my burnout and my sense of dissatisfaction. And ultimately, it led to me exiting my corporate career. Now, since being an entrepreneur and being out on my own, I may have flirted with a few instances of burnout, but I have not burned out. And I can tell you that it has a lot to do with this concept of expectations matching reality, but also ultimately the issues of control. You have to remember, for me, the trigger for my personal burnout issues revolved largely around the idea of control. The fact that I didn't control my time, my energy, my environment, my relationships, and my, you know, my money, my earning potential being at somebody else's mercy. In entrepreneurship, the anxiety around that changes and shifts, but most of the variables are within my control. I still have to get the work done. I still have to work a certain amount of hours or get stuff, you know, knocked out, but I was able to control my, you know, sleep pattern. I was able to control my energy output. And I also was in an environment where other people could only interact with me upon my say-so. So I had a lot more control and autonomy, and the buck stopped with me. So it's a lot more responsibility, and that's a different form of stress. But that is much more internalized than feeling like I'm at somebody else's beck and call. So that was a factor. Now, money wasn't coming in right away, so money was still a stress factor. But the fact was that I felt confident in my ability to make money if I was in control of all of my time. That's something that most people don't necessarily have the confidence for. But my experience with freelancing and moonlighting allowed me to have a certain level of assurance where that was concerned. Experience actually dealt with what would normally be insecurity. So that was definitely a factor, at least for me. Now, something I will say about this is not for everybody, but I want you to kind of take what I'm saying here with a grain of salt and see if you can apply it to yourself. What can you do in your situation to assert more control? Because the thing is, the answer wasn't just leaving my job. There were incremental steps I was taking to get back a little bit more control. Primary example, freelancing on the side on my nights and weekends was giving me back a little bit of financial leverage, a little bit of financial control. I knew that my income would not be reduced to zero. That helped deal with some of that anxiety. Okay. In terms of the interactions and how people were treating me when I felt I wasn't being treated well or treated unfairly in all of my relationships and not just at work, I started asserting much more control and standing up for myself. This is also what kind of brought the working situation to a head, is I started speaking up. I stopped being a yes man and I stood up for myself. That is a factor. But I also did it in my everyday life with my relationships, with my friendships. I made my expectations clear and I started cutting people off or limiting their access to me if they didn't meet my expectations or if they didn't treat me in the way that I set a standard for. So by changing my standards, I was starting to change my situation and my outcomes. And I changed my standard to give myself more control and to give me the things that I felt I needed in order to feel, you know, happier and to feel more empowered and to feel more confident. And so when I started changing those things, it started with me changing how I act and what I will accept. And then that rippled out externally. So telling people what I want and what I expect from them, offering a consequence of less access to me, allowed me to control my interactions and control my energy. As an introvert, this was very important for me as how I was protecting myself. So I started being able to control more of my energy instead of letting people take from me all the time. It was going to be given on my terms, not theirs. And I even found ways to incorporate this into the workplace. Not all of them worked. Some of them worked better than others. And not everyone liked it or agreed with it, but I was starting to feel better about not dealing with people, frankly. Those things made a lot of sense for me. I also started looking at my own habits. So I started looking at how I went through my day, what I was spending my free time on, what was making me happy, what energized me, what sapped my energy. And I started really auditing this so that I could, you know, change those things and put myself in a better situation throughout my day. So I started listening to different music. I started eating a little bit better. I started eating on a regular schedule. I started making time and a priority to exercise and work out and take breaks and clear my head and go walk around. And it made a real difference to just focus on these little things. I looked at how I was spending my money and whether I was doing that in a way that made sense to me. Could I save more? Did these things really make me happy? Were they a distraction that I needed? So I started taking a little bit more responsibility there, taking control there, taking responsibility for how I felt and for every aspect of my situation that I could, where I could assert myself. Taking responsibility was very satisfying and very empowering. So I continued to make that a theme, and I engineered that to be a new habit in my day-to-day life and in my mindset. And what this did was it started to allow me to protect myself. I also decided that I needed, and since what I did love when I audited myself was I loved creativity. I loved writing. I loved reading books. I loved sketching. I loved drawing. I loved photography. I loved, you know, the idea of playing around with like these things in Photoshop and video editing. So I started to do more personal projects. I started to do less things. Like, even though I enjoyed them, I spent less time on video games. I spent less time watching TV. I spent less time sometimes even going to the movies or going out with friends. I didn't cut them off completely, but I limited that so that I could spend more time focusing on things that I could do for myself that didn't cost any money and that were really satisfying emotionally, but also would add to my own personal development, things that might give me an advantage or down the road, reading books being a big factor, reading either self-help books or business books. Those really helped me a lot and it cost very little. And a lot of them I already owned. So in some cases it cost me nothing. Drawing cost me next to nothing. Writing a short story or something, or even writing a think piece cost me nothing. But the upside and the value that I got out of it was tremendous. It was exponential. And so I started making that more of my priority. I changed my priorities. I changed my standards. I changed my habits. And this gave me overwhelming relief. So let's fast forward. I've done over 1,200 videos on YouTube, about maybe 1,300 at this point on my main channel. And I've probably, with the other things I've been doing, like the clip show for the podcast and also some other content I'm working on, and also the interviews and collabs I've done on other channels, let's just say I've done like 1,400 videos on YouTube for myself, hundreds of collabs, interviews, and I've done literally over 2,000 live streams at this point. And I haven't burnt out as a content creator, not even once. How is that possible? Well, I don't think it's because I'm myself miraculous or special. I think it has to do with the fact that when it comes to my content, I'm not being leveraged. And I had no expectations coming into YouTube and the ecosystem of YouTube. And I don't prioritize growth and my growth metrics. I like experimenting with those things. I like dabbling with them. And I do get a little dopamine hit when something performs better than something else. But my expectations and my motivation are much more internal and process driven than external and validation driven and results driven. And I'll explain that here in a bit. Here is what burns out content creators on YouTube. A lot of this has to do with a combination of what I call the trinity of fear. Fear of the algorithm, aka the platform. Fear of the advertisers and the money tied to that and the industry. And fear of the audience and whether they will acknowledge you, accept you, or abandon you. These three external factors take away the joy for content creators on YouTube and other platforms as well. Same thing with like Twitch. Oh, are you going to get banned? Are trolls going to come in and grief you? What's going to happen? Like, you know, there's so many of these factors, regardless of what platform you're on. I'm just going to use YouTube as the most relative example and the one I have the most familiarity with, since I know more YouTube content creators than I do content creators from all the other platforms, and I'm more familiar with it. But what I'll say is that for YouTube content creators, they're somewhat at the mercy of the algorithm, the audience, and the advertisers, because without those components, what they create doesn't provide them with any value outside the satisfaction of making something, but that's not necessarily sustainable. Not to mention, a lot of content creators are emotionally leveraged by, if I make something and nobody sees it, does it still have value and does it matter, even if it only matters to me? It is impossible for most people who come to YouTube to be satisfied with an audience of one, because that's not the way that most of them have experience creating, because of the fact that you have to remember, most YouTube content creators are not like me in this instance. I'm about to be 35 years old here in 2019. I grew up in a world pre-YouTube, pre-internet, long enough as an artist to appreciate making stuff only for myself and actually being resistant or reluctant to let other people even see it for fear of them judging it and infecting my creativity. And I was protective of my work because I didn't want other people to influence it. And YouTube content creators, what they make is influenced by the demands of the algorithm telling them, you know, what content it'll serve, what formats are acceptable, what policies are acceptable. Let's take Boogie, for example, Boogie2988. Boogie has a fun, creative, character that does not fit YouTube's community guidelines, at least the way they currently enforce them. It's his character, Francis, and his audience and fans love the Francis skits. There are some brands and sponsors that are okay with it, but YouTube is not okay with it in terms of monetizing those videos, and it's not okay with it in terms of serving those videos to the broader audience. And so that takes away a lot of Boogie's incentive to do it, because unless it's sponsored, which is harder to do because of the content, it can't be financed. The content is also expensive to make, sometimes hundreds of dollars to make. And so he'll go in the hole just to appease the audience. And that doesn't make any financial sense. And then it's demoralizing when YouTube doesn't even serve the video up the way it would a normal video. So there's no dopamine hit from the like fact that this is performing well. There is the acknowledgement of the audience, but only the ones who get to see it in a limited capacity. That's not fun. And then it risked the overall health of the channel by not performing and by not bringing in money. And it may turn some advertisers off. So where's the creativity then? Boogie is in a position to take this thing that he made that is in a way a pact between him and the audience of something they say they want, something they've demanded. He would have to compromise and change it into something unrecognizable. He's experimented with that. That doesn't work. And it's still a creative compromise. And at some point, you just have no incentive to do something when it's a compromise. So, I mean, that's a primary real-world example of a creator being kind of pushed to abandon their creativity in favor of leverage, you know, like in favor of what best serves their interest, because it's painful to make something at your own expense. You're going to end up despising it. That's how people end up in these careers, you know, where you start to hate showing up to work. You loved it. You loved the paycheck. You loved what you were working on. And then just little by little, it chips away at you because the incentives or the reason for doing it isn't satisfying enough anymore. You're not getting enough out of the effort, or not what you expected, or what you feel is appropriate, or what you deserve. And that's where the burnout sets in. That's where the being demoralized sets in. Okay. That's where the frustration comes from. So you have to put yourself in a position where you have an outlet creatively, where you can do something and there aren't compromises. And I've always put myself in a position to compromise as little as possible. But also some of that is by not monetizing things that are more personal to me. I'll give you a primary example. What you guys may not realize is that making YouTube videos is not my number one passion. Even teaching the stuff that I teach in YouTube is not my number one passion. It might be a number three or number four. What am I more passionate about? I'm much more passionate about like actually doing art and creating art in the form of things like Photoshop and photography and creative writing. And also, I would say loosely that there's a little bit of me that actually likes doing still. It's very basic and it's not anything that looks good, but doing animation and visual effects is something I really enjoy, right? So these are things that I'm very passionate about. But you'll notice that that's not the content that I primarily make on YouTube. Why is that? Because I really, to be very frank and blunt with you guys, I have no interest in making variations of that that you only you guys care about versus what I care about. If I don't make that content on YouTube and I don't try to monetize that, I can make whatever I want and none of you ever get to have an opinion about it. And that's how I protect my creativity, and that is a pure outlet for me to do something and not worry about all of you. Now, the thing is, someone would say, well, Roberto, like, how is that satisfying if you do something, you work really hard on it, and no one sees it or acknowledges it? Because that's not the point. That's not my expectation. My expectation is that I made a thing, and now I'm satisfied with the fact that I took something in my head, and it exists now, and I get to enjoy it. Or I get to share it with one or two people that are very close to me, and I get to have the intimacy of that. I get to hang photos and artwork up on my wall, and it's appreciated instead of scrutinized, judged, picked over, commentated on. I don't have to deal with that. And I lived in a world where that is something that people did, again, before social media, is they made things because they deserve to exist. And so I gave myself a pure outlet for my creativity in that way. I also, when I do want acknowledgement for some of those things, I go to platforms where I feel less stress or where there's not a sense of permanence. A primary example is Instagram stories. Sometimes I'll share things in Instagram stories because there's a 24-hour self-destruct sequence, and the feedback is usually, because of the community that I've cultivated there, very positive. It's not to say that the YouTube community isn't positive or that it's, you know, problematic in any way, at least not for me, but like depending on who you've built up as an audience, as a content creator, whatever. But again, Instagram is a low pressure platform as far as Instagram stories, because again, it's nothing permanent on the record. Now, that being said, that's just how I approach it in terms of how I protect my creativity. There are many ways to protect your creativity and to create an outlet for yourself. I also really like that, you know, taking photos for myself when I travel and scrapbooking in that way. I've even thought of making a private Instagram for friends and family so that if I do want to share it and have people experience it, it's a curated experience. It's quality over quantity, in the sense of a lot of you believe the lie of quality over quantity when it comes to your content, but you won't accept the truth of that when it comes to your online relationships and to your audience. A lot of you will not admit this, but you would rather have a million strangers acknowledge and appreciate what you do than just have 10 close friends or 50 successful people acknowledge and appreciate what you do, because the larger number is just undeniable to anyone and everyone. It's a very convenient flex. And it's like, and I understand that. And it's not that I don't understand the value of it, or it's not that I wouldn't want something like that, but it's a matter of how many compromises you're willing to make to get there. And the problem is, to get there, because of the way that systems like YouTube and Twitch and Instagram work, it takes a lot of creative compromises between what you want versus what other people want, and what the platforms will accept and what people will pay for. Do you see where I'm going? You end up with way too many cooks in the kitchen to still feel like you can call yourself creative, because at that point, you're doing it for the money, or you're doing it for the applause of the audience, or you're doing it because it's what the platform said is safe to do in order to be able to have the access, you know, to not get blocked, to not get banned, to not get deplatformed, to not get demonetized. So again, it's all of these compromises that are creating the burnout. And there's not really a cure for it on the system side, because think about it. The platform is the platform. It has to deal with the external pressures of shareholders, international laws, regulations, all these things. The platforms, I'm not demonizing the platforms. They're doing the best they can, literally. And they do an impossible task every single day. It's a miracle they work at all. Like, this stuff didn't exist when I was growing up for a reason. It was hard, you know? So there's that part of it. The advertisers, look, I think that sometimes they're a little chicken, okay? But I also respect business and the bottom line. And like, I'll be daggone if any of you guys tell me how to run my business. So I'm not gonna necessarily like take swings at them on that. I think that they're a little rigid. I think there's a cultural barrier a lot of times between people who make the decisions versus the average consumer. And I can say that about any part of any business for the most part. But I don't think that's a problem that's easy to solve right away. I don't think that's going to be a snap your fingers kind of thing. And then there's the audience. We're told, and I say this too, not to blame the audience, but to a certain extent, there's an issue with the audience. The audience in many of these platforms, if it skews younger, has disposable time. In YouTube's case, disposable watch time, which rigs the algorithm in favor of what appeals to younger people, which will be the lowest common denominator, which means that the platform learns around their behavior and their patterns and so on and so forth, which means the platform is not good with abstracts. It's not good with nuance. It's not really good at sorting out ideas. It is very easy for the platform and for young people, because it's now a young brain or a small brain. And so it's easy for it to figure out things like products or brands. It's easy for it to think of names like celebrities or politicians. It's easy for it to deal with events and brands, you know, TV shows, Star Wars, Game of Thrones, Dragon Ball, Real Housewives, whatever. It's easy for it to figure out very simplistic things. And creativity is complex. And so when the audience doesn't deal in nuance and doesn't deal in abstracts and doesn't deal in originality and fails to reward it because they don't want to waste time because of impatience or short attention spans or liking what they like or something is popular, the platform decides, because its goal is to give the people what they want. The platform, all these social media platforms are pure populism, essentially, okay? give the people what they want, and you will be rewarded. And that means ignoring what you want. That means we get more clickbait, we get bright colors, we get flashiness over substance. And so I do blame the audience. I do blame the culture of social media for essentially making us dumber and dumber and dumber, because the incentive is attention and money and acceptance. And that is all leveraged at give me something that I can understand really quickly, and so that I don't feel like I'm wasting my time, even if I have an abundance of it. Because again, we're all very, in some cases, let me rephrase this. We're not ruthless enough with our time, but we are precious about it. And I think that you should be ruthless and strategic about how you spend your time, but I don't think you should be precious about it. Meaning that I think that you should make a conscious effort to explore new things and new ideas. You have a lot of people who will complain about small YouTubers not getting noticed and acknowledged, and that's not the platform's fault. That is something that I wholly, and it's an unpopular opinion, and I accept that, I wholly blame the culture and the community for not giving people they don't know a chance unless they clickbait and use a larger creator to grow. I wholly blame the community and the culture and the audience for not giving original ideas and things a chance unless it ties to a product or a brand or a franchise that's already established that you know. I do. I blame the culture and the community, the platform, for the expansion of fake news, because sensationalism and getting people excited or angry or using outrage culture or mob mentality is working, and facts and substance and truth have largely become irrelevant in favor of being entertaining. The mainstream media has caught on to this and devolved in that way as well. The mainstream media, in many cases, uses the same tactics as clickbait YouTubers, and we all lose as a result of it. That's a much broader conversation, and I have someone in mind that I could bring on an interview on the podcast that actually would be able to speak to that. So I'll just kind of like make a note of that for later. But moving back to how we deal with this and why this causes burnout, is it causes burnout because it means that you could work so hard on something. And I see creators of all sizes, whether they're larger content creators, whether they're, you know, small YouTube channels, whether they're up and coming streamers, I see them all struggle and fight to try to find their place and have a voice. And it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart because they see what is growing and they know it has nothing to do with what they care about and has nothing to do with what they're passionate about. And in some cases, it has nothing to do with what they would be good at. And that's discouraging, and it robs them of the motivation to keep trying and to keep making content. If you're listening to this and you're an up-and-coming content creator, an aspiring content creator, you know exactly what I'm saying is true. And I do believe that people should take responsibility. I'm not just blaming the audience or blaming the algorithm or blaming the advertisers. Like, I'll tell you what I did. So because I didn't pick my number one or number two or even number three passion, it meant that there's a certain level of compromise that I'm okay with, because in being a teacher, you have to teach in a way that people will understand. And to some extent, you have to be willing to get their attention to make them interested in something that might be unsexy or something that may not be, you know, riveting, but will benefit them in life. And you know that what I want is I want people to not be starving artists. I want people to realize they have creative ability and potential, and that maybe they just never had someone to offer them the skills or to teach them that it can be profitable and to help them along their way. So I offer that in a way of being a mentor to them from afar. And, it's been very successful for me. The good news is I have the business savvy to know how to monetize that. And so I'm not beholden strictly to the advertisers like many of my contemporaries in YouTube. Ad revenue does well for me. Don't mind telling you guys, averages $3,000 to $4,000 a month. Lowest I've ever seen it drop to is around a little over $2,000 over the last couple of years. So ad revenue is pretty good, considering that like I average less than 500,000 views most months. If it's a very good month, it could be 5,000. dollars on like 650,000 views. But again, I don't rely on that. Brand deals. The biggest brand deal I think I've ever done is over $20,000. That's not the norm. I don't do them that often, but it helps. And that's great. But outside of YouTube, I have a six-figure business. And even outside of that, you know, let's say that goes low, and let's go conservative on that. Worst month for Awesome Creator Academy in last 12 months was probably, I think, somewhere around like 5,000 or 6,000. If that was the norm, then that's still a very good living and a very good salary. Okay. Affiliate marketing does very well for me. That doesn't do less than 5,000 or 6,000. So I'm going to be okay without YouTube AdSense in the worst case scenario of that. But I'm also building out other YouTube channels, exploring even more options, and I keep adding new revenue streams. Why? I understand what it's like to lose an income and to lose a job and to have worry for that. And so I put myself in a position where I monetize as many ways as possible in as many different platforms as possible with as many different methods as possible. And even with brands that don't rely on my name and don't rely on my face. And so I do that to protect my income, because if I'm not leveraged by my income, I can protect my voice, my creativity, and compromise less. I can negotiate much more ruthlessly with brands. I can make content I believe in and not worry about how the platform handles it or distributes it as much. I can not chase views. There are things I know I could do to go viral. Now, for funsies, it's fun to experiment with something of how can I take something I actually like the idea of doing that has viral potential, how could I make it work? And that's fun to play with. You know, it's fun to workshop those ideas. It hasn't borne any fruit yet. When I get a video to go viral, I'll tell you exactly how I did it and why it worked. But, I'll be gracious. I won't make you pay money for that. I'll make a video for free that nobody will watch. So that's the, that's the joke, right? So what I would do is, I gave myself financial freedom and leverage so that I could make what I want creatively and not worry about the algorithm or the advertisers as much. And then the compromise or bargain I've kind of struck with the audience is that I want to be useful, I want to be helpful, and I want to be as authentic as possible. So I'm going to sacrifice entertaining you or fighting for your attention as much as possible in order to build that relationship and that trust and be reliable and be consistent and to also not burn out. And because I had no expectation of an audience to begin with, and because I've become accustomed to how the platform works, and because I specifically target search and long form content and long tail content, evergreen stuff that's video on demand in nature, I don't get as disappointed if videos don't get views or don't perform. People don't believe me, but what I get is, because of my niche, very high CPMs for those videos for the views that they get. Abnormal CPMs, if anything. I have the relationship and trust with the brands because they like the engagement for my audience and that it's a buying audience. It's an older audience, a little bit more affluent in nature, because my audience's primary demographic is 24 to 44. And then it goes up older and older, 54 plus. And it's great because those people are more likely to be buyers. I do have some affinity with the college crowd, 18 to 24, but almost no affinity except for like maybe 3 or 6% of young hustlers under 18. So when a brand comes to me, they know they're not getting a lot of views, but they know they're getting the right views. And because I have real sales numbers for my own products and for the other affiliate deals, they know that my audience has buying power and I can prove it. So they're willing to pay more for that. And like I said, not every brand deal is a $10,000 brand deal for me. I've done brand deals as low as $5,000. Like, that's fine. Like, and they don't need to be. But what I get to do is I get to be picky and choosy. I'm going to be making a video about this, but what you guys don't realize is that I've turned down over $100,000 worth of deals in recent years. I've walked away from that much money. I've left over $100,000 worth of deals on the table because I felt they were a compromise and I felt it was not in the best interest of the audience. And, you know, I wasn't going to do that to my brand. That's why I think in episode 35, we talked about building a brand to last. When you don't make compromises, when you don't cash in early, when you don't sell out, you're protecting your reputation and you're feeling good about your work. And that gives you a lot more longevity versus the short-term money. And so that's just a value that I set for myself. When you have rules that you set for yourself, when you have standards you set for yourself, when you have expectations that are reasonable, you can avoid burnout. So if you want to avoid burnout, I think that you need financial relief from the content that you're creating for an audience and for a platform. You need a way financially to be able to make yourself whole without relying entirely on what you're creating in that way, so that you can protect your money. Because that's a huge anxiety point of, if this doesn't perform, if this doesn't do well, oh, I'm doomed, right? So that's part of it. You need a creative outlet for yourself so you can feel satisfied with what you're making, so that if you have to compromise in order to feed yourself, it's not so bad. As long as you're keeping integrity, you can give up some creative freedom and some expression in favor of, you know, just being financially viable, you know, being able to make yourself whole and, you know, stay alive. You know, you need that cash flow, okay? For content creators, I would tell you that sometimes freelancing and using your skills and using your creativity to make money that way can help you offset what you have to do to make money creatively, and then you can take it or leave it, and you can focus on being creative and having fun and the relationship with the audience more than how much money it makes if you use your same skills to make money on your own terms, somewhat as a freelancer instead of working a 9-to-5 job. Instead of working a 9-to-5 job, watch my videos on freelancing. Learn how to hustle your skills. It's why I'm so focused on skill building, is that if you get skills, and the skills to be a content creator are high income skills. Like, mastering audio is hard. Making a podcast is hard. Live streaming is technically complicated. Video editing and production, technically complicated and requires creativity. So guess what? You can charge people who don't want to deal with that money and make really good money without having to be an influencer and do brand deals and all that stuff. You can make money on the skills of a content creator by being a freelancer and contractor, instead of an employee where you might not have the degree or enough years in to get paid very well for that. So that's why I encourage, that's the creative part and the creative part of making money online, and why I do those videos, even though nobody watches them. That's why I do it, is that there's an opportunity and that can give you freedom to create what you want when it comes to building an audience, because then it doesn't matter if the money is there yet. You can hold out knowing the money will be there eventually and you can do what you want. And I'll give you an example of this. Matt Diavella, you guys might know him for his short films on YouTube around minimalism and these really great high concepts. He's one of the few people, I think, who's been able to figure out communicating big ideas on the platform despite the platform's small brain. And his content is advertiser free. But it's only advertiser free so long as his audience supports it financially through Patreon. But he uses the skills as a filmmaker to do commercial work. And he also had a background in that pre-YouTube. So by using his creative skills as a filmmaker and, you know, a true creative professional and technician, he, you know, can offset what is necessary in order to do the content the way that he wants to do it. And because that gives him a better position of leverage to not be beholden to the advertisers, he can win in the algorithm because there's a strong covenant between him and the audience. And because in doing his style of content, while also with filmmaking, high quality content, and not doing it super frequently, and it's a pact between him and the audience, they show up when he makes a video and they fully support it both financially and they support it with their time. And as a result of how the audience reacts, the algorithm reacts to Matt. And so he is in the driver's seat. He is in control. But I genuinely believe, and I also believe that the fact that his videos are advertisement free are a big part of why his audience prioritizes his content over all the other distractions in YouTube, that when they see a Matt D'Avella video, they go to it, they sit down for it immediately, they hit the notifications, they watch it, they share it because of the, again, the bond in the relationship and the promise and the expectation that he set with the audience. So I think that that was leverage, but not everyone can do that. And he can do that because he uses his skills and because he delivers such a high quality and caliber of content that people are willing to financially support it. And guess what? That will not be everybody. I'm not telling you to do that, but I'm giving you an example of how someone managed to give themselves an out and be able to take control of their creativity and protect their creativity and their content. Okay? So that's another way to kind of like avoid burnout, is to leverage as much control once you've identified the points of anxiety. And I'm using the advertisers, the audience, and the algorithm as kind of the main feature here within a social media context, because if you're a content creator, you know, that's the point. And I've already talked about how to deal with it in the workplace and in your career. As an entrepreneur or as a freelancer, you live with the hand-to-mouth, you know, issue of having, you know, clients, you know, having clients and having customers. And that's why I developed, you know, passive income through affiliate marketing and set up recurring affiliate revenue. It's why I've done videos about that. I'll try to link to those things in the show notes because that creates an offset for me. So setting up multiple streams of income for me was a way to create less pressure and to give myself, again, even more leverage, even more control. When it came to customers and having direct access to customers, building my email list so that I'm not at the mercy of the YouTube algorithm. If you want to build your email list, it's not a sponsor, but check out ConvertKit. It's what I'm using for my email marketing and my automations. It's how I get the, you know, Create Awesome newsletter out to all of you guys in the community. So you can go to robertoblake.com/newsletter if you haven't signed up, and you'll get newsletters from me usually Tuesday mornings around 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you want to start your own newsletter, if you want to have access to your audience without an algorithm, then go to robertoblake.com/convertkit, use my affiliate link, and sign up for ConvertKit, do a free trial, or start, you know, going into it right away. And, you know, really decide that you want to have access to your audience, because I'll tell you one thing, social media is great for building up attention, but the problem with it is an algorithm decides when you have access to your audience. You have no way and no direct access to every single person in your audience in any one of these social media platforms, and you cannot, you know, contact all of them at once. You'd have to go down in some cases the list one by one, and in many cases you don't even have that option. Email is the only place where ultimately a human being decides instead of an algorithm when it comes to the internet right now. So I would encourage you, if you haven't already, to start email marketing. In the show notes, I'm going to link to a video I called 7 Steps to Starting Email Marketing, where I break it down for you. And again, my recommendation is that you use ConvertKit because it's what I'm using. I'm doing tutorials around it and it's really convenient. And on the automation side, if you ever decide to sell things or do business, it's called ConvertKit for a reason. It really helps. So check that out, robertoblake.com/convertkit. Link is in the show notes. Now, part of me bringing this up is because having that direct access to your audience means that you can communicate with them. If you have something to offer them, like merchandise or an offer, or you want to tell them where you're going to be at a public event or a meetup, it means that you have a better chance of them knowing about it. You know, they don't miss a video because the algorithm decides, oh, they did that. You know, they don't miss an Instagram post. It's taking all of that out of the equation and worrying a little bit less, because the anxiety point with part of the audience and the platform relationship is, what's the algorithm going to do? Is it going to suppress my content, or is the platform going to throw me away? Is it going to ban me or block me through a glitch or a mistake or copyright or trolls, or am I going to get hacked, or what's going to happen here, right? And so that is a very uncomfortable feeling, and it adds to the pressure day to day of everybody who's a content creator. Now, when you're an entrepreneur, you prioritize your email list, you prioritize follow-up and communication with your customers, and you put systems in place for those things. Something I did was I wanted to have more connection with my audience. So back in the day, in the early days of like live streaming, mobile live streaming with Facebook and Periscope and Meerkat and all these live streaming appliances, I started doing a lot of live streams almost on a regular daily basis to be able to have more of a relationship with my audience and talk to them and get them used to me in a non-recorded setting and with my guard a little bit more down. And I've been trying to do that more in Instagram lately. And I've even done some stuff in Periscope since Periscope sticks around. So I've been doing some of that, and I've been also using it to experiment with content for the YouTube channel in terms of testing things and seeing how people react to it. And that intimacy, that relationship with your audience is powerful and it's important, and you want to protect it. And one of the most important reasons to protect it, besides just, you know, that being your people, is that there's at some point a transactional or financial relationship that happens if you're fortunate and your audience wants to support you. And giving your audience ways that they can support you is another priority that you need to set to help with the financial burden, and also to feel like what you're doing matters. Because when people don't see your content or they don't acknowledge it, whether it's the platform or not, you start to think, well, people don't care about me, or what I'm doing is irrelevant, or I'm irrelevant, or I did a bad job. You don't have a real way to reassure yourself that you're doing the right thing if you're not getting some kind of support from people. Financial support is important for that as well, because it's an objective measurement that people committed to you and invested with you. And with content creators, many of them are reluctant to directly sell to their audience and convert a viewer to a customer. I did that much later in the life cycle than most content creators would, and I would argue than most content creators should. But I also wanted to assure myself that I was making the right things and putting out things that I believe in and that I respect, and I was doing it the right way, and that I could find a way, because even though I'm a very good salesman, I don't want people to feel like I'm salesy. I don't want people to feel pressured to buy from me and to support me. And I needed to find a way that I could sell appropriately. And the thing is, I still feel like I'm figuring it out. I still feel like I don't market my actual products and services enough, because the reality is that 99% of my audience has no idea what I do for a living outside of YouTube. That's devastating that most of my audience doesn't realize that they can buy stuff from me or they can hire me. But that's on me, because again, I'm navigating my level of comfort with how to appropriately sell to the audience, to you, because I know that you're bombarded with people who are all doing that, and some are doing it very aggressively. So I'm trying to work in ways in my messaging to where it's appropriate to sell to you and where it aligns with what your goals and your expectations are. And I also am trying to set a good example, because the problem with trying to teach you to assert yourself more, make more money, and sell and do these things, and not just do passive selling and passive income, but actively go out and hustle and ask for the sale and believe in your value and deliver it and ask for what you deserve, and even ask for what you deserve from brands and brand deals, is I'm a little too comfortable sometimes financially to where I don't push and I don't do those things. And I feel in many ways I set a bad example, because many of you are not in the position that I'm in. I wouldn't call it privileged. I would say I'm fortunate, but I worked very, very hard for it. And I sacrificed for it. But a lot of you are not in as advantageous, that's probably the right word. A lot of you are not in the same advantageous position that I'm in after all these years, which means that you can't be as relaxed as I am with not marketing yourself, not selling your products and services, not asking for more money, not doing or as much as possible to make as much as possible. Because for a lot of you, you really do need to do that. And just because I don't feel that financial pressure and burden, I feel like sometimes I'm setting a very bad example by not doing more sponsored stuff and then talking to you about what I did and what the process looked like. I feel like I'm sometimes not setting a good example by not showing you by example how to properly and consistently promote to your audience in a way that they will accept. Because sometimes I guess I'm even nervous about, will you guys accept this, or will you guys call me a sellout, or will some jackass make a video saying that I'm a fake guru? I think about those things, and I worry about those things too. I'm not immune to insecurity. I'm not immune to those pressures. I regulate and manage them enough to avoid burnout, but I will tell you that avoiding burnout at all cost, or as much as possible, also means that I'm not taking the risk to maximize delivery on my ambition. The reason that the biggest content creators on this platform and on every platform, and even celebrities, are talking about burnout, and entrepreneurs are talking about burnout, is because they're the people who fly close to the sun. But we all want to be up there with them. And the thing is, by holding back because of fear of burnout or not wanting to compromise or any of those things or take risk, we clip our own wings. We clip our own wings. It's amazing that I've gotten to the extent that I have because I'm someone who minimizes and mitigates risk to manage my anxiety and to not work myself up and to set expectations that are manageable to avoid depression and burnout and that anxiety and to not overwork myself because I know that I have bad habits. So that's where I think I'm not doing a good job. That's why I think I don't set a good example sometimes, is because I am a little too comfortable and thus I risk the bare minimum. And I don't think that that's always the appropriate thing to do. And it's something I'm working on. So just kind of sometimes take what you see from me with a grain of salt. You can definitely see it reflected even in the views. I don't take a lot of risk with the content sometimes. When I have taken risk with the content, it has been rewarded. And part of the podcast and the relationship I want to build with you guys here and also in live streaming is to accustom myself to taking more risk, being even more direct, even more blunt, removing the minimal filter that I already use. It's like, it's not that big of a filter, guys. Like, I just, you know, am wanting to go deeper with you, and I'm wanting to also go further and challenge myself more because I'm shaking off that level of being comfortable. I am wildly ambitious, but I'm not going to get where I want to be using what's worked. What got you here won't get you there. And some of you need to figure out where you are at in terms of balancing that, what you can do without being overwhelmed. And I'm exploring that the same as all of you, you know. So that's something that I've been thinking about. It's a conversation that I have with my students, my mentees in awesomecreatoracademy.com, which actually this is a good segue to kind of do, I guess we're the sponsor of this episode today.
We thrive thanks to the support from our sponsors. Here's a word from one of them.
So for those of you who aren't familiar, AwesomeCreatorAcademy.com is an online education platform for influencers and entrepreneurs. We talk about the business of social media and how to monetize your content, but we also teach business owners how to thrive in the 21st century by building out their online presence or even their personal brand. So if you're interested in learning more about how to basically monetize your skills, your passion, and your creative ability, and you want some advice on that in terms of a great community, more direct access to me, and access to exclusive training materials, you can join the AwesomeCreatorAcademy.com mentoring program. If you'd like to work one-on-one with me, I also offer 30-minute and 90-minute paid coaching sessions where we can go in-depth on how to either expand your reach and your audience, or we can talk about your monetization strategy, or we could focus specifically on your content strategy. So we're focusing on the combination of either business development and how you can monetize better, or how we can make improvements to the work that you're already doing and optimize it to get a little bit more juice out of it, or how you can grow the relationship with your audience. So those are things we offer at awesomecreatoracademy.com, as well as a variety of courses and digital download products. So if you're interested in any of that at all, visit awesomecreatoracademy.com. So yeah, I think I did a fairly good job with that ad read, considering I did that completely off the top of my head. I don't have a screen up. I don't have show notes for that in front of me. I don't have my phone out. And I did that ad read, I think, very well. I'm going to just kind of pat myself on the back for that. But yeah, I think that ultimately, if you want to protect your creativity, you have to recognize the threats to your creativity and what is making you unhappy, what is making you uncomfortable, what is stressing you out, what is making you feel overwhelmed. And I think it's even a broader conversation than just those of us who are entrepreneurs or content creators. I think this could apply to people in their day-to-day life. If you identify what's making you unhappy, what's making you anxious, what's making you sad, what's making you angry and frustrated, and you can identify those things, and then you can identify what you can do about it, what you can do to take control or take responsibility or to assert yourself in that situation appropriately, then I think that you're on the road to being less compromised, more happy, more fulfilled, more satisfied with the situation and outcomes that you're able to produce. And that's ultimately what my own experience has led me to believe. And that's what I've done. And I've found that it's been really helpful. I feel like when I take responsibility for things, when I take control back from the situation, it's empowering, it's invigorating. And I don't feel at the mercy of everything else. I don't feel so scared anymore. I don't feel afraid. I don't feel the burden. And I feel like it's a very powerful thing to put yourself in that place. And it's slow. It's not something you're going to do overnight. But I think if you just take it one decision at a time, I think even decisions sometimes feel like a burden. I think if you can find a way to not feel the pressure of too many decisions and being overwhelmed, if you can just like kind of condense things down, and if you can become a more decisive person, a more intentional person, like move with a purpose, that life just gets better when you do that, okay? I genuinely believe that, and it's what I've lived through. And if there are questions you have about that, or if you want to further this conversation, reach out to me on Twitter, at Roberto Blake, or follow my motivational journey over on Instagram, also at Roberto Blake. I'm very open about this stuff, and I'm happy to talk to you about it, you know, so just like at me, you know? But yeah, I mean, that's where I think I want to bookend this episode of the podcast. I thank you guys for tuning in. If you enjoyed this sort of thing, then leave a rating and review in iTunes. I normally don't have these like number or like subscriber-based goals, but in terms of getting feedback from you guys, in terms of getting honest feedback about the show, what I would love is to, by the end of the summer, have over 200 ratings in Apple iTunes and have, you know, maybe 75 honest reviews from you, the audience, about how you feel about the content here, what I've done for you, maybe in your personal journey or your career development, or, you know, even how I could do better and serve you better. So that would be amazing if you could leave that feedback over in, you know, iTunes or Apple Podcast. For those of you listening elsewhere, just if you enjoyed it, share it out with people, let them be part of the conversation, see if it's valuable to them, or discuss it on your own. And like I said, if there's anything you would like to hear on the podcast or guests that you would like me to invite to the podcast, feel free to reach out to me in Twitter or Instagram. I'm always very happy to have feedback around this. So yeah, that's it for the show, you guys. I'm going to give you some recommended reading and materials in the show notes if you're checking that out. Remember, you can visit us over at createsomethingawesometoday.com. We're still revamping the website, but I'm trying to get the show notes and episodes up over there and not just where podcasts are distributed. So definitely make sure you're checking that out. Sign up for the newsletter over at robertoblake.com/newsletter. And of course, all resources will be in the show notes down below. Thanks, you guys, for tuning in. And just remember, go out there and create something awesome today. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Create Something Awesome Today podcast. Hungry for more creative and practical ideas? Why not visit createsomethingawesometoday.com and access all resources and links mentioned in today's show, as well as special bonus content that Roberto regularly crafts for you. Now, go create something awesome today. CreateSomethingAwesomeToday.com.